Hey, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. Great to be with you. This is what we call the Fireside Chat. That's Otto. Otto is really knocked out tonight. I called his name. Nothing happens. But I got to tell you, he does show up for, so to speak, the set. It is very funny, actually. I have another dog who refuses to be this cooperative. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. And thank you for all your attention to Otto. Perhaps America's best known dog at this time, which just cracks me up, I have to admit. This is my home. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's the Fireside Chat. There's the Fireside. I'm the chat. And this is completely unrehearsed, as some of the nonsense I already went through is probably revealing of. But it really is. It's a chance for you to know me better, for me to get your questions, and to talk about everything in life. There are viewers all over the world. Literally, we know that we've gotten questions from 51 countries. So you can imagine how many countries have just people who are watching. And I'm very touched. Most of you are young, but if you're 98, I'm honored to have you as well. Even when I was a kid, I never understood the adulation of youth. It's such an odd thing. I don't adulate youth, and I don't adulate old. I adulate wise people, good people, and I'll have more to say about that. But let me begin on a light note. The folks who make this video possible saw me opening a package when they came in. This is my home, after all. So I got a new lens to try out. I've talked to you about hobbies. You should watch my hobbies. What number was it? Do we have any idea? If you find out, I'll announce it. I spoke about it. It saddens me. When I was a kid, and every generation gets this from older people, when I was a kid. By the way, sometimes it's silly and sometimes it isn't. When I was a kid, there were more hobbies. It's just a fact. How many young people today have a camera? Yeah.
84.
Fireside Chat 84. There you go.
Get yourself a hobby.
They're very healthy and important. So photography has been my whole life. Look, I know you can get some beautiful pictures with a phone. I use it. I know that. But it's not comparable to what you can get from a camera, let alone indoors in bad lighting, let alone bringing in people closer with a telephoto lens or wider. Anyway, it's just better stuff. So I got this to test out in the to see if I want to buy it. You can rent lenses, I'm sure, in many countries that you're watching, and certainly in the United States. And I did a show, and you should all know, by the way, anywhere in the world you could hear my daily radio show, which is 3 hours, and I talk about what's happening in the world and so much more. If you like this, you would love that. So just be aware of that. There's a Dennis Prager app. You could listen, again, online. You could listen on local radio in the United States on about 200 stations, 250 stations. The Dennis Prager Show. Anyway, I did a show on, is it okay if objects bring you happiness? Or are you empty? Are you sort of an empty person if things bring you happiness? And I argued that there's no problem in things bringing you happiness. There are, obviously, I believe that there are things, quote unquote, that will bring more happiness than things. But yes, I don't see why not. Maybe I should do an opening monologue on things. And is there something wrong? Because every year there's always a tax on consumerism, people buying too much. And some people do buy too much, but it's a very tough call. Every one of you who has any discretionary money is buying too much. You know you're living in a bigger place than you need to live. You're using air conditioning or heating more than you really need to. You got a bigger screen TV than you really need. I mean, this is such nonsense. Everybody lives better than they need to. I mean, you need a shack and food, you know, and two pairs of clothing, and that's what you need. So it's a dishonest thing. Oh, well, you know, we get much more than we need. Anyway, when I buy, I love the people who make these lenses. This is, when I buy something, this was taught to me in high school, and it made a big impact. Whenever you buy something, you're voting for it. It's a very brilliant idea, and it's never left my brain that I made a vote for this lens, if I buy this lens, obviously. I voted for it in a very concrete way. And when I buy my audio equipment, because I love music so much, it's the only thing that I spend a lot of money on personally. I don't have a yacht. I don't care about cars and so on. I certainly don't have a plane. Oh, God, would I love a plane. But not to fly it, but because I fly too much. It would make my life a lot easier. But in any event, I get pleasure from that audio equipment, and I love the fact that I'm supporting some guy who's some genius. I just bought some audio equipment from a guy in Bulgaria that a friend of mine who's an audiophile, a lover of audio equipment, alerted me to. This guy's a genius. Not not many people know about this guy, but we found out about him. He's not a millionaire. He just loves music and he's brilliant technologically. If people didn't buy his products, what would he be doing? What would he be, a farmer? Would he be driving Uber? There's nothing wrong in being a farmer. Nothing wrong in being Uber, but his contribution is his brilliance in audio equipment. Anyway, I ended up talking more about buying things. Anyway. I'll come back to that too. So I wanted to talk to you about something else. This is even more serious. I had a realization based on what I've recently spoken to you about, the panic among a lot of young people about they don't have a future. There's an existential threat to human existence, and it's all just horrible hysteria. That's all it is. And I realized that in America, and those of you watching outside of America, this may well apply to you too, but obviously the centrality of the United States makes what happens in this country of interest everywhere. The left, and this is universal, but the part two is American. The left has deprived American young people both of their past and their future. The left has told American young people, your past is awful and your future is awful. I make the case on my radio show and in my writings that everything the left touches, it ruins. Art, music, movies, religion. It's endless, the list. Not liberals. I don't agree with liberals, but I have nothing against them. Except that they vote for the left because they think the right is their enemy and the left is their enemy. But think about this. See, every leftist is unhappy. There are liberals who are happy. There are conservatives who are happy. There are conservatives who are unhappy. There are liberals who are unhappy. But leftists are all unhappy. I'm not a young man, and I never met a happy leftist. They're angry. They're unhappy. They yearn for meaning in their life, which they find from being very destructive. Their unhappiness reflects itself, or is inevitable, I should say. If you feel your past is awful and you feel your future is awful, you're not going to be a happy person. let's be clear. So they're telling young people, and this is a first. It's never happened in American history. To tell a whole generation, your past stinks and your future stinks. And this is what left-wing teachers and left-wing clergy and left-wing media and left-wing actors and actresses, this is what they're telling young Americans. It's an astonishing thing. It's vile. It's just vile. I feel bad for kids. This, if you should be ashamed of the American past, there's no country on earth that should not be ashamed of its past. Think, you know how many slaves, talk about slavery. There were far more slaves in South America than North America. I don't know if Brazilians are walking around telling their kids, you were formed in slavery and racism. I don't know if they are, if they're being told that. They could be. Or Muslim kids. There were more slaves that were conquered by and shipped by Muslims than even by Christians. Are they being raised? Oh, God, you know, horrible past here in Iraq or Saudi Arabia or wherever it might be. I mean, I think everybody needs to confront their past. That's a separate issue. Anyway, the American past is not just one of awful slavery. It's also one of fighting to abolish slavery, which is pretty important. Not many countries in the world abolish slavery. So look at what the left has done to kids. Your past is awful, and your future is awful. That's really wrong. Okay, let me take the questions. Thank you, Megan. Megan is really, really good at what she does. I want to say that because I spend most of the time insulting her. That was a joke, by the way. I do not spend most of the time insulting her. Okay. All right, so we now we have this new innovation. By the way, new innovation is redundant.
I hate redundancy.
Hate it. In fact, I have a bumper sticker. I hate redundancy. People then go, what? Which is sad. People should know what redundancy means. We have an innovation. Can you say, is new innovation redundant? All right, I'm not going to bother you with this. This is the sort of stuff that eats up my time. Okay, so let's go. Here we go.
Hello, I'm Spencer Schreiner, a 23-year-old grad student at Purdue University, and I was just wondering what you would do to help someone who is dealing with the death of a close family member and has not been dealing with it well.
Well, first of all, my heart goes out to you if you're the person. I have a feeling you're asking on someone's behalf, but it might be you're asking, obviously, it doesn't matter, but I do wonder. I would have to speak to you a little more, first of all, to understand what does it mean not dealing with it well. I will infer from what you said that the person is not able to in any way enjoy life, that the person is just depressed, maybe even not wanting to leave the house. I mean, there are terrible manifestations to grief, especially the loss of a child, the loss of a beloved spouse. My dad lost my mom, lost his wife. They were together 72 years, my mother and father, married 69. She was everything. She was more to him than my brother and me, which is fine. I'm not saying that with any resentment. She was the center of his life, not his kids, not his grandkids. I mean, he loved us, obviously, but the center was my mom. And when she died, he was 90, and his last 6 years were unhappy years. I never saw my father cry, and then I never saw my father stop crying. So I've seen this firsthand. So I don't know who this family member is, this loved one who died, whether it was a child, a spouse, a parent, a friend. Death of a friend is often more painful even than the death of a sibling. A lot of people are closer to some friends than they are to some siblings. And that's not a knock on siblings. You choose your friends, you don't choose your sibling. It's inevitable in some ways. I can only tell you this. I knew a man who lost his son, and that's often considered the most painful loss, the loss of a child. He lost his son when his son was 21 years of age. His son was in a car crash. And I spoke to this man, whom I did not know well at all, but I met him at some speech I gave, and we were seated at lunch together. And I knew of his loss. And I like to talk to people about real life. I'm very good at talking to strangers, but I'm not good at small talk. So I talk real things with people. So I asked him how he was doing. This was about 8 years later. And he told me that he was inconsolable. Nothing helped. He said therapy did not help. Religion did not help. Friends did not help. Family did not help. So I said, did anything help? He said, yes. When I met other people who lost their children, we had special get-togethers of parents who lost children. They were the only ones who really could empathize with me. I could empathize with them, and that helped me. Different things help different people. My view is that we have an obligation to ourselves, to all the other loved ones in our life, and to the person who died, not to die with them. I hope I'm not tested, but that is the way I look at it. Ellen, 66, Auburn. Where's Auburn? Not Auburn, the college, Auburn University. Anyway, if you can ever find out, you know, the states. What do you find to be the greatest drawback to your being a known public figure, conservative commentator? Love your work. Thank you. The greatest drawback is that I'm aware that I'm always watched. And I don't mean in a bad sense. Like, for example, I mean, it sounds trivial, but it is trivial, but it's emblematic of what I'm saying. Excuse me. If somebody cuts me off on the road, I'm very tempted to yell at them. But I realize, whoa, what if they know who I am? And start videoing me yelling at them. I actually think of that. Then you know, a few million people see on the, oh, look, Dennis Prager, yeah, he's got a temper. So, you know, I'm aware that I don't have the same exact freedoms that a person who is not well-known does. I would say that the advantages are outweigh the disadvantages. Also, I've always been a public figure since I was 21 years old. I started lecturing publicly then, wrote my first book at 25. So I've never known a time when I was not known publicly. And it's just part of my existence. I don't get off on it, and I don't lament it. It is what it is. And when people come over to me, which happens every day of my life, at an airport or a restaurant most often, I'm very touched by their sweetness. So I'm never it never bothers me. People think, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. And it's very sweet to say that, but I don't feel that. Erica, 27, Los Angeles. What are your three favorite words in Hebrew or three favorite words in any language? What do they mean and why? Wonder why she asked about Hebrew. I don't know what my three favorite words in any language are. I would like to think that through, but I know what my favorite word in English is, and you didn't guess it. My favorite word in English is, this is where a drum roll would be truly appropriate. That's make-believe drum roll. That is not a real drum roll. Even that is not a real drum roll. Banging your paper pad. My favorite English word is earn. E-A-R-N. I love that word. And unfortunately, it is not common in other languages. For example, if you say, in English, if you say, I earned $100, so you would say, I earned $100. In French, j'ai gagné 100 dollars. I gagné. Gagné does not mean to earn. It's the word that you would use in French, but it really means to win. Similarly, in Spanish, it's ganar, which really means to win. In almost any language, I believe in Russian, it does mean more to earn, but it's pretty rare. There's a big difference between earning $100 and winning $100. Winning $100 makes people think you sort of won a lottery. That earn means I deserved what I got. I deserved the reward that I got. I worked hard and earned it. I think by and large people should earn love. I'm not a big believer in unconditional love. Maybe a 2-year-old should get unconditional love, but by and large in life, I think you should earn your spouse's love. Okay, I don't think it's healthy for you to think that you have the love of your spouse is unconditional. Meaning, no matter how you treat him or how you treat her, you'll be loved. Do you want that? Do you, any one of you watching, do you think that's a good thing? That a spouse would think, no matter how you treat me, I will love you? I don't understand why. You had to earn your spouse's love when you dated, right? Why should you stop once you're married? My friend, I have to earn my friend's love regularly. I should. I love it. I love that fact. I'm on notice. They don't put me on notice. I put me on notice. You gotta treat your friends really well. You could lose their love. So I earn their friendship. That's good. And theologically, which a great number of you do not share this theologically with me. You know I'm a major advocate, one of the major living advocates of Judeo-Christian values. But obviously Judaism and Christianity, while sharing values, do not have the same theology. Otherwise they'd be the same religion. All right, has no effect on me. I think the values are what matter to me. But in Judaism, you earn your way to heaven, and in Christianity, it is the gift of Christ's sacrifice for you. So you don't earn your way to heaven. And I like the Jewish approach, that I have to earn my way to heaven. People then say, well, yeah, but you'll never do enough good to earn, and I never understood where that notion came from. I mean, I think God is fair and just and compassionate. And he knows that Mother Teresa deserves to go to heaven and Hitler doesn't. But I'm giving you two extremes so that just to make my point. But anyway, whether you agree with my theology or not, it's not relevant at all. What's relevant is that I explain how on every level I love the word earn. Okay. Time-wise?
25.
Cool. All right, David 55, Minnesota. Dennis, I, as an American, am increasingly worried that the concept of consent of the governed is alive only in theory and has been this way for quite some time now. I'd love to hear your take on this. Thanks. Well, actually, I think it is not only been, what did you write? It's alive only in theory. I think it's alive. Americans still have elections. I'm not happy with the way the governed are giving their consent in many instances. They give their consent to the party that promises them more free things. That's my bigger worry. People can keep democracy and ruin their country. It's a republic, by the way, America, not a democracy. And as Franklin put it, it's a republic if you can keep it. That's our job. All right, let's see here. Dustin, 26, Atlanta, Georgia. Mr. Prager, I'm a cop. For those of you outside of the U.S., that's a policeman. And a huge fan. What are your thoughts on universal basic income? Seems like a way of implementing communism to me. No kidding. By the way, since you just heard my favorite word is earn, universal basic income seems to violate that rule. For breathing, we will give you money. It's like trophies to kids who don't win. It began when my kids were kids, and I thought it was ridiculous. Their team didn't win, and they got a trophy anyway. They didn't earn it. You don't earn a trophy by showing up. Isn't that absurd? I even asked my son at the time, he was like 10. Hey, David, why'd you get a trophy? For playing. I remember thinking, that's it? Wow. What if you didn't play? Would you get a trophy then? I didn't ask him that, but I'm just thinking. I was thinking then, well, what if he didn't get in the game? He got a trophy anyway. You don't even have to play. You have to show up. It's the show up trophy. I have come to the game. I breathe. I breathe, therefore I am entrophied. It's more and more. We'll give you. It's corrupting of human nature. People need to earn. The only happiness is earned happiness. You cannot be given happiness. You can only earn it. All right, what's our story now? 28. I could take another one then, right? Right. Okay. Aaron, 17. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I'll take the one from Brazil. Herbert, Curitiba, Paraná, Brazil. I'm a big fan of yours and PragerU's lessons. Obrigado. My question is about the growing presence of Muslims in European countries, such as France. Is this situation being managed correctly by the governments? What are the possible consequences in the near future in Europe and the world? The issue has nothing to do with race. The left calls this racism. It has nothing to do with race. There's no Muslim race, so the idea is preposterous, right? There's no Muslim race. There's no Christian race. So anyway, most Europeans are not Christian anyway. The problem is values. Every immigrant brings something with him, with her, and that is values. They bring their values. When New Yorkers move to Florida, they bring their values from New York. It's nothing to do with race, and they're very different from traditional Florida values. New Yorkers are on the left. Southerners in the United States are on the right. When Northerners move to the South, most of them bring their left-wing values with them. Now, if you think that's a good thing, you're thrilled. If you don't think it's a good thing, you're worried. I'm worried. I'm worried about the values that most Muslims, not all, but most, bring to Europe. It's not a tradition of tolerance. It's not a tradition of openness to other opinion. It's got a very bad tradition of anti-Semitism. It certainly has got overlaid with anti-Christianity. And the treatment of women is not good in most Muslim places. So I have to say, I do worry about bringing these values into Europe, of course, or into Minnesota. You're from Brazil, I'm just mentioning, because Minnesota has a large group of people from Somalia. That's the issue. And with Europeans not reproducing, because the secular don't reproduce, it's one of the many awful consequences of the death of God in the West. People don't even make babies. That's pretty significant. You know that, because if any of you met an American or French or Norwegian or any Western family, basically, in fact, probably in Brazil, if you met a Brazilian family with five children or more, the overwhelming likelihood is they're religious people, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Mormon. They're very religious. So that's the issue with immigration. What values do they bring? Latin Americans bring big government values to America, because that's the tradition in Latin America. America is the only place in the history of the world to enshrine the value of small government. So I worry about what people bring. Well, all right, everybody. I'm going to go and enjoy my camera. And poor Megan I really choked her up. So I just want you to know, our studio audience, there's nothing, I can't do anything to control the studio audience. No, it is what it is. Anyway, it is great to be with you. I want to remind you that it's countdown to the movie that I'm in. Very big, extremely. It's a great movie, and it's not a great movie because I'm in it. It's just I'm in a great movie. It's called No Safe Spaces, coming out in a few weeks. Please look for it on the internet. Watch the trailer. I promise you, it will touch you. It is about liberty in America and the world. Adam Carolla and I are the quote-unquote stars, but the movie is way bigger than us. No Safe Spaces. Anyway, with that, thanks, and I look forward to being with you next week. Bye-bye. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these Fireside Chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.